It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from atop Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 35 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. It is a beautiful day. We're looking for a high near 38 today. Southwest wind about 5 miles per hour will become calm later this afternoon. Slight chance of rain and snow showers this evening between 9 p.m. and midnight. Then scattered snow showers tonight. Mostly cloudy skies with a low around 32. Coming up on the midday news, Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported new cases of COVID. Coast Guard Cutter Hickory helps out Angoon, Alaska. And more troubles for the VHF radio system, including stations near Kodiak. That and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The polar vortex is keeping an icy grip over the central U.S. while that region and the eastern United States get ready for another winter storm in the coming days. Rolling energy blackouts were implemented from Minnesota to Texas. Sarah Will Ernst of Houston Public Media explains how the energy infrastructure in Texas, where roughly 3 million are still without power, led to widespread outages.
Demand for electricity in Texas has skyrocketed while supplies have dipped. That's largely due to natural gas power plants that generate 50% of the state's energy and are not used to operating in extreme cold temperatures. Texas has its own power grid and can't trade power with neighboring states, which Dan Cohen, who is an energy expert at Rice University, says is one reason for the outages.
Texas made a decision many decades ago to have its own power grid that wouldn't connect to the rest of the country, in part because we didn't want federal rules telling us the way Texas would handle things.
Cohen says another solution is to diversify the state's energy sources, such as investing in solar and maintaining nuclear plants. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Willa Ernst in Houston.
The Biden administration is putting $1.7 billion toward the improvement of coronavirus testing capacity. But as NPR's Tamara Keith reports, officials say it amounts to a pilot project and far more is needed.
Here's how COVID response coordinator Jeff Zients described the current state of testing in the U.S.
We have too little capacity for diagnostic, screening, and genomic sequencing. It can take way too long to get a test, and there are too many barriers to widespread testing and screening.
Testing coordinator Carol Johnson said the goal is to increase capacity for testing in schools and congregate settings, improve surveillance to find coronavirus variants earlier, and boost production of components needed to make more tests.
Including pipette tips, the specialized paper used in antigen tests, and the specialized molded plastics needed to house testing reagents.
Nearly a year after then-President Trump said anyone who wants a test can get one, it still isn't true. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
Conservative talk show radio host Rush Limbaugh has died at the age of 70. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports Limbaugh's death comes a little more than a year after he disclosed to his audience that he'd been diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer.
In a career that spanned more than three decades, Rush Limbaugh helped revolutionize conservative talk radio and became the medium's most influential voice over the years. A self-proclaimed doctor of democracy, Limbaugh was a hero to conservatives, but deeply offended others with his pronouncements on gender, race, and numerous political issues.
When Sir Johnson reporting shortly after the diagnosis was disclosed, President Trump presented Limbaugh with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. You're listening to NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization reported 7 new local COVID-19 cases on Tuesday and 1 new case this morning. Among these were 2 travel-related cases, 2 community transmission cases, and 4 close contact cases. This brings the total case count to 1,057 cases since the start of the pandemic, with 10 cases currently classified as active. There have been 42 hospitalizations and 5 deaths locally due to COVID-19 to date. There are currently no active local hospitalizations. The Kodiak Area Emergency Operations Center announced Wednesday that there would be no broadcast update from Mike Venge this week. Further, the EOC announced that there would be a follow-up vaccine clinic to the one hosted 2 weeks ago at the Harbor Master Building. The follow-up clinic will be held Friday, February 19th, exclusively for those needing their second dose. An additional clinic will be held the next day, Saturday, February 20th. The second clinic is appointment only from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., with registration available at COVIDVAX, that's vax with an X, .alaska.gov, COVIDVAX.alaska.gov. Assistance with this process can be reached at this phone number, 907-646-3322, 646-3322. Following a waterline failure in the community of Angoon, the Coast Guard cutter Hickory delivered nearly 7,000 bottles of water to those in need. The Coast Guard District 17 Command Center received a request Saturday from the Alaska Emergency Operations Center for assistance transporting the water bottles. Waterline failures left a third of the Angoon community without water altogether, and the remainder of the community was advised to boil water before consumption. The local store had run out of water, and commercial services were unable to deliver the water quickly enough. The Hickory is a 225-foot seagoing buoy tender based in Homer. Due to extreme weather conditions, the VHF radio system across south-central Alaska has been experiencing outages over the past week. While repairs are ongoing, the U.S. Coast Guard is still unable to receive a consistent VHF signal in many locations, including Raspberry Island, located between Kodiak and Afognak, and Cape Gull, which is north of Kodiak. The Coast Guard is reminding mariners to practice extra caution, such as having a secondary means of communication on board, especially in these areas, as intermittent outages are expected to continue. State officials are scrambling to figure out if they'll be able to determine who is eligible to be vaccinated and where supplies of vaccines should be sent once the COVID-19 disaster declaration expires on Monday, which it already has. During a news briefing on Wednesday, Governor Mike Dunleavy said with the legislature deadlocked, they have to prepare to lose some emergency authority.
Would a declaration assist this? Yes. If there is no declaration, is it going to throw us into chaos? We don't know. We don't think so. But certainly an extension would help the cause.
The governor also says his administration will continue to manage the pandemic response. Before the November election, political groups made last-minute ad blitzes to try to tip the state house toward their agendas. But up until recently, there was no way for Alaskans to know who was paying for the attacks. Only after the election did disclosures show that at least one big Alaska corporation was involved, Anchorage telecommunications firm GCI. Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media has more on how voters were kept in the dark, but may not be next year.
If you were listening to talk radio before the November election, you might have heard this ad.
Which party controls the state house? Lance Pruitt is one of the most respected members of the legislature. Liz Snyder is supported by Ethan Berkowitz and the liberal Anchorage Assembly. She is for an income tax and government-run health care.
Snyder, a Democrat, actually refused to endorse an income tax, and she ended up just winning the race against Pruitt, the incumbent and a Republican whose supporters included, well, those behind the ad. So who is that exactly?
Message: top contributors, Republican State Leadership Council, Families of the Last Frontier, and Bruce Campbell.
Almost all the group's money came from the Republican State Leadership Committee, a national political organization that helps get GOP legislative candidates elected. But Alaska elections law doesn't require donors like that group, the RSLC, to say where their money comes from. which means that campaigns like Snyder's and several others targeted by the RSLC-funded attack ads last year didn't know where the money paying for them was ultimately coming from. That made it harder to respond to the ads, says Amber Lee, Snyder's campaign manager.
I mean, anytime any information you have changes to some extent what kind of research you're doing and what kind of tactics you're using.
Only after the election did the Internal Revenue Service require the RSLC to disclose its donation from GCI in a routine filing, $100,000, which is more than many legislative candidates raise over the course of their entire campaigns. That number came as a big surprise to political professionals like Lee.
Are you kidding? Wow.
Corporate executives often contribute directly to candidates, and sometimes businesses also donate to groups involved in campaigns. But a corporate donation the size of GCI's is unusual in state legislative races. The fact that few people outside the company knew about it shows just how hard it is to keep track of the money flowing into Alaska politics. Lee used to work for GCI and says she knows its leaders are politically conservative, but she also says she's perplexed about the company's involvement.
They obviously had some kind of agenda, and I don't know what that agenda would be, but, you know, there's no reason that a group like GCI would put money into something unless it benefited their business model.
GCI declined to make anyone available for an interview, but a spokeswoman says the company donates to the RSLC because of their advocacy for candidates who support strong economic policy and businesses like GCI. The RSLC wasn't the only big outside funder of efforts to influence Alaska's legislative campaigns last year. On the Democratic side, progressive groups that don't reveal their donors also made 5- and 6-figure contributions. And because those groups are organized differently, the public still doesn't know who their donors are and whether any are based inside the state. That will change starting this year, though. A citizens' initiative that passed in November will force groups to disclose what the initiative calls the true source of their financial contributions, which Shea Siegert, the initiative's campaign manager, says will provide more accountability for donors like GCI.
Getting this information from various IRS tax documents in February for money that was spent to influence Alaskan voters in a November of last year election does nothing for the voters. And so that is the problem that ballot measure 2 aimed to fix.
The initiative's rules requiring greater disclosure will take effect in time for this spring's Anchorage mayoral election, Siegert says. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
During her annual trip to the Alaska State Capitol yesterday, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski said that the Republican Party has to decide whether it is the party of one man, former President Donald Trump, or of principles.
Republican Party, in my view, was a pretty good party before Donald Trump, and I believe we can be a good party after Donald Trump. Right now, I think we're still trying to figure out who we are.
Murkowski acknowledges that the Alaska Republican Party may censure her for her vote to convict Trump of inciting the January 6th storming of the U.S. Capitol. She says she put her obligation to support the Constitution first. Due to COVID-19 and the delayed organization of the Alaska House, Murkowski did not give her annual address to a joint session of the legislature, but she met with small groups of lawmakers and answered questions from news reporters. Murkowski said it would be a challenge for her if the GOP became the party of Trump, but she would never switch to another party.
There is no way that I would go to the Democrats. I'm not a Democrat. And so I continue to be a Republican, but I am not a Trump Republican.
Murkowski says states must ensure that elections are secure. She says they also should do everything they can to make voting easier for everyone.
Not easier for Republicans, not easier for Democrats, not easier for this minority or that. Everybody. And so when we put limitations in place, either intentionally or unintentionally, that's not who we are. We want the participation.
Murkowski declined to announce she's running for re-election next year, but suggested a campaign launch was in her future. The company looking to develop a new gold mine near the eastern Alaska community of Tetlin says exploration of the site has yielded promising results. Kinross Gold, which bought a majority share of the Peak Gold Project last September, is now working with communities that would be affected by the project if the mine is developed. That includes a sharp increase in truck traffic on two highways between Tetlin and Fairbanks. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Kinross Gold spokesperson Anna Acheson says exploration conducted around the mine site since last fall has yielded some promising results.
We anticipate that this will confirm the economic viability of the project, and based on that, we're planning for production to start in 2024.
Acheson says Kinross officials have also gotten feedback, which he says has mainly been positive, from residents of Tetlin and other communities that would be affected by the project.
We've met with dozens of stakeholder groups and individuals in the last few months, including spending time down in Tok regularly. People are very excited about the economic boost to the project.
Toronto-based Kinross has been exploring for gold at the mine and conducting community outreach since soon after it bought a 70% share of the project from Houston-based Contango Ore, its partner in what's now a joint venture. Acheson says Kinross also has met with state transportation officials and trucking industry representatives to work out plans to transport the ore from the proposed mine to the Kinross Fort Knox mine mill north of Fairbanks.
We have heard some concern, you know, that there might be a need more passing lanes or perhaps wayside, which, you know, means that people might just be pulling over and taking a break through some of those sections.
Acheson says those are some of the ideas that have been floated to reduce traffic backups that might form behind the 3 to 4 trucks per hour that Kinross says would be on the road hauling ore over the Alaska Highway to Delta Junction and then the Richardson Highway to Fort Knox, 250 miles away.
We are working with officials like DOT, and we are listening, and we are taking that into consideration when we design and plan.
Acheson says Kinross will continue planning and design work on the project during the scoping study phase that's expected to continue through the end of the year. And she says company officials will hold more meetings with community members and state and federal officials. She says by the end of the year, the company plans to begin the process of seeking permits, formally weighing in on the proposed projects, during the public comment phase. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
A large solar array was quietly installed in the wilderness at the edge of Denali National Park this last two summers. The remote system is drawing recognition from solar and renewable energy analysts because it could generate 90 kilowatts and powers the small village called Camp Denali. KUAC's Robin has this report.
Conditions were perfect in the spring of 2019 for Camp Denali to start building a solar array. There was very little snow and the ground was still frozen. In trucks along the 92-mile park road came the photovoltaic panels and all the electronics that go with them, and 18 21-foot steel piles to be driven into the ground. Jenna and Simon Hamm run the 70-year-old ecotourism resort with cabins and lodge buildings spread over 67 acres.
Our aim is to entirely power a commercial operation. The 16 panels, 18 arrays, works out to 288 panels, and its capacity is about 90 kilowatts.
The impressive remote solar spread took two summers to install. The panels and electronics were designed and hooked up by Greg Egan of Remote Power.
It is a cool project. It's a big, complicated system. This is the biggest installed project that I've done.
Egan built up the equipment and bench-tested it in his Fairbanks shop before bringing it down and through the park. He was impressed at the environmental standards the Hams worked to.
They really wanted to take care of the taiga. 50 years ago, maybe 60 years ago, the original homesteaders, they drug like a big tree across the tundra there, and there's a 4-foot ditch there because they squished, you know, the memory foam. They damaged it, and it doesn't come back.
A mobile rig from Denali Drilling out of Anchorage came to the site to drill 18 holes for the support stands that hold the arrays. But bringing a piece of heavy equipment to the wilderness took some planning, Ham says, and was followed by a lot of handwork.
We made things harder on ourselves. Again, the stewardship piece, we didn't want the tundra all ripped up. Backbreaking effort by our staff, our crew of Camp Denali, to lay protective mat on top of tundra, to replace tundra manually by hand anytime it got disturbed in the slightest. Proud to say that it's hard to tell that there is a drill rig out there.
As work went along in the summer of 2019, it was time to bring in the nickel iron batteries that are specially made to withstand being left dormant in low winter temperatures.
And our batteries weigh about 18,000 pounds. They arrived to the park entrance the day after the subsidence at Pretty Rocks closed the park road for 2019.
The slipping road service caused the National Park Service to close the road in August, and that meant a halt to some of the work at Camp Denali that year. Then, in 2020, the pandemic hit. That meant canceling all the reservations and laying off some of the 50 staff members that run the camp. But it also meant finishing the solar installation without disturbing any guests.
Because we weren't doing guest operations, we could focus pretty exclusively on projects, including getting the solar much farther along.
Now nearly complete, the installation has drawn the attention of renewable energy organizations in and outside Alaska. In 2021, the system will have a chance to prove what it can do. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. We're in the Lenten season, and it's the biggest time for seafood sales. More after this.
Halibut and black cod buyers and sellers, simplify your sales online from one location at the Seafood Auction. Visit seafoodauction.net.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Today is Ash Wednesday, the start of Lent, a time of fasting and soul-searching for hundreds of millions of Christians around the world. The word Lent derives from the Old English Lenten, meaning spring. Many believers will give up favorite foods during Lent, or they'll devote time to volunteering or charity work. And what the peak holiday season from Thanksgiving to Christmas means to retailers, Lent means to the seafood industry. Food Services of America, for example, reports that Ash Wednesday is the busiest day of the year for frozen seafood sales, and the 6 weeks following is the top selling season for the entire year. The Lenten season, which this year runs from February 17th through March 31st, dates back to the 4th century. Ash Wednesday is so called from the ritual of placing ashes from burning palm branches on the forehead as a sign of repentance. The ashes symbolize the religious statement, "Remember that you are dust, and unto dust you shall return." In many countries, the day before Lent, called Mardi Gras, has become a last fling before the start of the long fasting season. For centuries, it was customary to not eat meat during Lent, which is why some people call the festival Carnival, Latin for farewell to meat. While nearly all seafood enjoys a surge of interest during Lent, the most traditional items served are whitefish, such as cod, pollock, flounders, and halibut. But no matter what the seafood favorite, the six-week Lenten season is good news for Alaska, which provides more than 60% of the nation's wild-caught seafood to U.S. restaurants and grocery stores. Find links at alaskafishradio.com and on Facebook and Twitter. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 17th day of February, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:34 a.m. and will set again at 6:15, giving us 9 hours and 41 minutes of precious daylight. That's a gain of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high was 48, set in 1942, and our record low was 1, set in 1982. Currently, it's gone all the way up to 39 degrees here in Kodiak. It has been a beautiful day. We're looking for mostly cloudy skies this afternoon, high near 38, south wind to 5. Slight chance of rain and snow showers this evening between 9 p.m. and midnight, then scattered snow showers For tomorrow, scattered snow showers before 9 a.m., then the good old rain and snow showers tomorrow afternoon. Partly sunny, though, tomorrow with a high near 36. Northwest wind of 15, could gust as high as 25 miles per hour tomorrow, and they're looking for clear skies tomorrow night with a high near 24, with a low near 24. Looking at our local tides, the east side just had a low tide at 11:23 this morning of 1.62 feet. Your next high tide will be at 5:22 this afternoon of 6.36 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:14 p.m. of 1.9 feet. Your next high tide will be at 5:42 in the morning tomorrow, 7.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 12:12 in the afternoon of 1.9 feet. Over on the west side, these are your organic past tides. You just had a low tide at 11:58 a.m. of 2.25 feet. Your next high tide will be at 5:55 and be 11.97 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:57 p.m. and 3.24 foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 6:04 tomorrow morning, 13.19 feet, followed by a low tide at 12:42 tomorrow afternoon of 3 feet. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will move across the Central Gulf and North Gulf Wednesday morning, then move back towards the Western Gulf Wednesday evening. This front will remain nearly stationary over the Western Gulf through Thursday evening as it weakens. A 967 millibar low, 250 nautical miles southwest of Sitka, will move Thursday morning to 100 nautical miles west of Sitka at 970 millibars by Friday morning. As a result, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory for Thursday. South wind to 15, right now and seas to 9 feet. For tonight, variable 10, becoming northwest 15 after midnight, seas to 7 feet. For Thursday, northwest 30, seas to 8 feet. And Thursday night, west 30, seas building to 13 feet Thursday night. Over on the west side, in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory Thursday as well. South wind to 20 knots right now, should diminish to 10 knots this afternoon, seas to 5 feet, subsiding to 3 feet this afternoon. For tonight, variable 10, seas to 3. For tomorrow, northwest wind to 15 knots, will turn to the west and increase to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas building to 5 feet tomorrow afternoon. Thursday night in the Shelikof, west 30, seas to 6 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays, Chiniak Bay, southwest wind 15 knots will become south 10 this afternoon, seas to 1 foot. For tomorrow, northwest 20, seas 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, southwest or south wind to 10 knots right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, northwest wind to 20 knots, seas to 3 feet in Marmot Bay. The Kodiak City Council will hold a special meeting tonight. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held virtually. You can go to the city's website to find a link to watch in on the meeting and listen. And you can also listen right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. If you'd like printed materials or have questions, call the clerk at 486-8636. Well, as we just heard, the Kodiak Emergency Services Director will not be providing a live COVID community update tomorrow. The live update will return next Thursday or a week from tomorrow, February 25th. If you have any questions for the EOC, call them at 486-8970. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is having their regular meeting tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. via teleconference. That will include citizens' comments, a public hearing on an ordinance amending the code about revenue and finance, appropriation and levy of tax revenues, limiting restrictions to general fund property tax revenues, and they have new business. An Alaska Wait suggested amendments to Amendment Number 1, amending the contract for commercial solid waste collection. Again, that's 6:30 p.m. tomorrow night. Go to the borough website to find a link for that. The Port and Harbors Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Thursday, February 18th. That's tomorrow. The meeting will begin at 12 p.m. This meeting will be held virtually. For everyone's protection, there will be no in-person attendance. The meeting will be web-streamed online. Again, go to the City of Kodiak website to find the portal for that. Meeting packets are available on that website as well. For more information, call the Harbor Department at 486-8080. And don't forget, the Kodiak Electric Association has 3 seats up for election on their board of directors. The deadline for filing petitions is March 10th, and the number to call about that is 486-7709.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.